both nations. Recognizing the growing importance of the People's Republic of China in world affairs, we will continue the process of building a working relationship with that country. Relations with Taiwan, and will give priority consideration to its defense requirements. The Republican Party supports the principle and process of self-determination in Africa and pledges its strong opposition to efforts by the Soviet Union and its militant allies.
Are there other states seeking recognition for the purpose of supporting the resolution of the delegation from Hawaii? The chair sees no indication that any delegation is seeking recognition, and therefore declares that the resolution, which would have been offered by the delegation from the state of Hawaii, fails. Without objection, a motion to reconsider the action of the convention in adopting the platform is laid on the table.
The chairman now recognizes the Honorable Margaret Heckler from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts for the purpose of making an introduction. I see Tennessee over there. Hello, Tennessee.
Mr. Chairman, fellow delegates, ladies and gentlemen, it has been said that the test of tolerance comes when we are in the majority, but the test of courage comes when we are in the minority. The man who will serve once again as permanent chairman of our convention has courageously led the Republican minority in the House of Representatives for nearly 7 years. But I have known John Rhodes for the 14 years in which I have served in Congress. And I have found him to be an articulate spokesman, an able leader, and an understanding colleague. Intelligence and integrity, imagination and insight characterize John Rhodes. We have been heavily outnumbered during these years, but under the leadership of John Rhodes, we have never been outfought.
How likely do you think a floor fight over some of these platform planks is now?
No, it's not likely at all. It just won't occur.
Can you explain to me what happened with this rule change attempt?
Well, what happened is that in order to suspend the rules, you must have a majority vote of six states. Then that brings it to a vote, and then you must have a two-thirds vote of the entire delegation, of the entire convention. It was just impossible. they could only get two states, much less six, much less two-thirds of 50.
Was Illinois standing in line to be one of those states?
No, we were not. It was voted down this morning in our delegation, simply for this reason. There was an overwhelming feeling that the convention would ratify this platform almost unanimously. Not almost unanimously, but overwhelmingly. Therefore, why take the 45 minutes for a roll call just to confirm what you already know? It was a useless exercise. It would have allowed some people to say, I voted against it. But I can say I voted for it, and I can tell anyone, including you, and we put it on the record then. And any other delegate can be asked by anyone, did you vote for it or against it, and they can say.
So is this more of the plan for a unified front? As long as you couldn't change anything, there was no point in
That's right. That's right. There was no need to try to have that roll call vote if it wouldn't affect or change a thing. All it would do is ratify the voice vote.
So even if those two states hadn't made their error, you would have only gotten two states.
That's all that were there. Now, I'm not saying that other states would not have voted if somehow they would have been forced to vote. But they could have caucused right on the floor and determined whether they had a majority or not, and only two states did.
And at least on one plank, the Supreme Court justice plank, I'm sure you're very disappointed there is not a change.
Yes, I was very disappointed in that. It didn't affect just the Supreme Court. It affects every judicial level, from the district court up to the Supreme Court. But we had a fair and square fight on it in the Illinois delegation, and the governor and I lost.
Of a precedent does this set? Isn't it unusual to set a single criterion like that for a justice?
I think it is. It's most unusual. I hope it'll never be done again. And I think the debate that we had probably alerted the delegates to watch out for such a plank 4 years from now.
Do you think maybe
because then they might be for capital punishment, they might be for school prayer, it might be for gun control, whatever it might be, capital punishment. You could have an endless number of single issues you could put as blood tests or litmus tests for judicial candidates, which I think would be really degrading to the system. It would be politicizing judgeships.
What harm do you think it does now that it's in the plank? Are you willing just to let it go and assume that it will be ignored?
I don't intend to pay any attention to it.
It's not up to you, though, right?
It's up to me. I'm not bound at all by this platform, nor is the president, and I doubt that he'll pay any attention to it. I don't think it'll affect a single nomination of a single judge.
So now
through your mind as the great noble effort fizzled in the Hawaii delegation?
Well, we tried the same thing in the Illinois delegation this morning and we lost, so we couldn't have aided the cause.
Is there any feeling, though, that there was some nobility to the cause?
Oh, yeah. I had two thoughts. First, I thought our three-hour debate and roll calls this morning on some controversial planks in the platform was a very healthy thing for the delegation. Very healthy thing for the Republican Party in Illinois, and I think it left everybody, even if it left them a little frustrated if they were on the losing side, as I was on three out of the four votes, left them feeling better about the delegation and its process and how we do things there. The second thought I had was, as I listened to the platform being read, was that the procedure was wrong. What they should have done was to give out the platform at least 24 hours earlier, last night, and most of us didn't see it until tonight. And then instead of reading us the platform, where we all can read, open the floor mics for 2 hours of debate. And I think that would have done more for this convention and more for the image of the Republican Party nationwide than almost anything I can think of, even if we ended up adopting the very conservative Republican Party platform we adopted. You know, at least those of us who had some questions or some thoughts about the platform would have had the chance to raise them or perhaps had them answered, you know, as we did in the Illinois delegation this morning. I, for the life of me, don't know why the rules of the National Convention require us to sit here like children being read to and then the vote yes or no on the platform, when we could just as well have had some floor debate. As I remember conventions from 20 years ago, 30 years ago, watching them on television. As a youngster interested in politics, floor debates on the platform were common and they were exciting. That's one of the things that lured me to politics that long ago, and it's too routine, it's too cut and dried, it's too open and shut now.
What kind of debate would you have expected? Do you think that might have gotten enough people interested to change the platform?
I don't know whether it would have gotten enough people interested to change the platform, but it certainly would have given those of us who had some disagreement with the platform the opportunity to say so publicly and in the same forum in which the platform itself was adopted. And I think it would have left a lot of Republicans out in the land, and maybe some Democrats and Independents too, with the idea that yes, there are in the Republican Party some people who have different views.
How do you think this platform will help or hurt Ronald Reagan in the coming months?
Well, I think the ERA plank, the failure to affirmatively support ERA will cost him some votes and some supporters. But I don't think it will be decisive in the election. It's Ronald Reagan's platform and what he says to the nation in the next several months that will be important.
What was the thinking of the Illinois delegation? Why weren't you ready to go along with the Hawaii?
Because we had taken a vote on that issue in the delegation this morning and it lost.
What was the reasoning? Can you sum it up?
Because the majority of our Illinois delegation supports the platform.
Was it because they support the platform, or because they didn't think it would do any good if they didn't?
Because they support the platform.
You think so?
Oh, I know.
Senator Percy disagrees with you.
Well, unfortunately, both Senator Percy and I were in the minority on the votes. We voted together. But if he doesn't think a majority of our delegation supports that platform, he better go back and listen to a tape of the debates.
I think I will accept your nomination. Okay. First of all, I don't want to surprise my oldest son too much, but this is his birthday, and I wanted to wish him a very happy 42nd birthday, and to tell him that all this jazz about life doesn't start at 40, that's all it is. And it gets better as it goes on. I thank you very much from the bottom of my heart. And I'd just like to take a moment, because I know your mother is watching this, to say thank you to her for making you possible. Thank you. Now, if you get tired of seeing me come to these conventions on crutches, believe me, should I throw it or just keep it here? If you get tired of seeing me on crutches, believe me, I get tired of being on them. But if you had to work around Washington, D.C., I think you'd probably wind up on crutches. In fact, I know some people back there that should be using crutches under their brains. Now, my fellow Americans, I thank you for this great honor. And I am particularly proud to be here with my fellow Arizonans and be able to stand with them when we ratify the name of our next president, Ronald Reagan. Now, let me suggest that these few moments that we will have together might be spent in a recital of the tragic miscalculations of the president and his administration. those economic decisions which have given us the highest rate of inflation in our history, those foreign policy decisions which have cost us the respect of our enemies and destroyed the confidence of our friends throughout the world, and those military decisions which have reduced us to the rank of a second-rate power. Now, my years of dedication to the problems of national defense compel me at this time to call history as my witness that weakness leads to war. My friends, if this country had been adequately armed back in the 1930s, there never would have been a World War II. If we'd had leadership worthy of the name, Vietnam wouldn't have lasted more than a few days. And let me suggest to you that if our country had been adequately armed and prepared, and another big if our leaders had displayed the guts and the courage America is noted for, no country in this world would ever have taken hostages from us. Yes, my friends, we might spend our time together criticizing, but in my humble opinion, we can serve a much, much greater purpose. We are gathered here as Americans and as representatives of the Republican Party. We are united by our commitment to the basic truths proclaimed in that living document, the Declaration of Independence. And let me suggest that we are here tonight, most importantly, to reaffirm our faith in those truths. We believe in freedom. We believe in liberty without license. We believe that because all men share equally in the love of Almighty God, every man must be equal before the law. We believe the citizen is sovereign, not people who gather in some hidden room in the White House. We believe that all legitimate government rests upon the informed consent of the governed. Now, we have not abandoned nor deserted these basic beliefs, and yet this beloved country of ours stands in great peril. Our fellow countrymen are distraught, confused, alarmed, and uncertain. Fear and distress abound. And our one task is to set before this nation a course which can correct the errors of the past and lead us forward. Now, to all of you assembled here tonight, and to those watching these proceedings on television or listening to the radio, it is my solemn belief that we must order a dramatic change in the direction this country is headed. There must be a change from distrust of our government to confidence in it. There must be a change from weakness, from uncertainty and weakness, to strength and trust. There must be a change from fear to faith, And we must turn our backs, ladies and gentlemen, on the false promises of something for nothing. And perpetual care and eternal bliss offered by the advocates of those who support a super federal state. My friends, we must penetrate the deception, and I use that word kindly, of those who have distorted and misrepresented our Constitution as an excuse for endless tinkering with our society, and reaffirm our understanding of the Constitution as the document which guarantees individual freedom and demands individual responsibility. Ladies and gentlemen, we believe in the Republican philosophy of government. Our enterprise system was once the model that all other countries sought to follow. The American enterprise system produced more products and more services and distributed them more equitably to more people than any other service ever devised. And yet we have people in Washington who want to take us into socialism, nationalism, controlled by the state. At this moment, our system, harassed and tortured by needless and costly government regulations, the American economic system, my friends, is in deep trouble. There is widespread unemployment. Taxes, local and state and federal, take almost 47 cents of every dollar earned. Inflation is wasted. Their individual freedoms diminished. They're ready for a change. They want a stronger America. They want a prosperous America. And they want a better, brighter, more secure future for their children and their children's children. They understand that the uninterrupted one-party rule of the United States has held its people hostage by the concept of a super government wielding unlimited powers to coerce, direct, and govern their lives. They want to change from a welfare state to one in which the employable work. Ladies and gentlemen, keep one thing in mind. The only reason we are here, the only reason there is a United States, the only reason that our ancestors, like my old Polish grandfather, came to this country was for freedom. I'll make this statement that the workers of America are unwilling to permit the truly needy to go hungry, but they are outraged by the massive frauds perpetrated by those who won't work. The American taxpayers will gladly support every proper governmental activity, but they are sick of the reckless, extravagant waste of public funds. In our eagerness to create a heaven on earth to protect every man from his folly, we have created a monstrous bureaucracy. However well-intentioned these efforts, they have operated to diminish the individual citizen's responsibility, freedom, faith in government, and in the future of our American institutions. And fellow Americans, one of the most incredible developments in American history is the manner in which this nation gave itself a self-inflicted wound. We literally burned out our eyes and cut off our ears. And I refer to what the Democrats did to practically destroy the CIA and the other elements of our national intelligence community, whose mission is to keep us informed on the many threats to our security. Get me a piece of Kleenex. We require intelligence on all areas around the world. And above all, we must know what the Soviets are up to. We must know all we can about the Islamic Crescent. Now, you think it's hot in Arizona? It's about the hottest damn place I've been all day. I love it. I'm not knocking it. We must know the truth about the unstable countries, the new nations of Africa, and the bearers of truth, offering common sense remedies, resting on historical understanding. Let us study the errors of the past without alleging meanness of motive. Let us seek to unite rather than to divide. And finally, as Republicans, we must not fail in our goal of changing the course of this nation. We must hold sacred our traditions of loyalty and morality. We must guard against destructive false criticism and apathy. We must not surrender to a feeling of helplessness. I truly believe divine providence has provided us with an opportunity to save this great country of ours. And if we leave these gatherings dedicated to that purpose, our duty as Republicans will have been nobly done. And before I leave, ladies and gentlemen, let me make a plea, not as a Republican, not as one who lived through probably the most divisive period that any party in the history of our country ever lived through. If we're not happy with every dot and comma in the platform adopted by this party, all right, let's live with what we've got that we like. I don't like all of it, but it's mine. Let's give the new President Reagan everything that we have in us. I can tell you there's no worse feeling than to go forth in this country as I did and tried to do my best, which wasn't good enough, by the way, which I've never regretted, but to look back and realize that with a little less carping, a little less nitpicking, a little more willingness to share, a little more willingness to give in, we cannot be a party of thousands and thousands of interpretations of morality or immorality or ethics or conservatism or middle of the road or liberal. We are Republicans. We love our republic. And our job, ladies and gentlemen, is to defend it. And let me tell you, save it. Because I have reached that point in my life, not a long life, but I'll tell you, it's been an interesting one. I've reached a point where I don't think we have much more time, where this might be the last Republican convention, and in 2 weeks, the last Democrat convention. There are forces working against our country. There are selfish forces working for their own interests in our country. And our country was built upon the concept that freedom came from God and that it belongs to all people. for me to be on this platform tonight is living proof that the American dream still comes true. I wish my father were alive tonight to witness this. He had to quit school in the eighth grade and go to work in the coal mines. And he left me with his motto of, the harder you work, the luckier you get. He knows that we can make a difference. And not to believe those people who say that we can't, because America never has and never will be a second-rate country. He knew that if we worked hard and made the sacrifices necessary, there is absolutely nothing this country can't accomplish. Most of you know I'm not a long-time politician. But even knowing that, I can guarantee you that I will reclaim the Everett Dirksen seat for Illinois and the Republican Party next fall. Prior to my getting into politics, working in my pharmacy one evening, my wife called and said we had a prowler. I said, call the sheriff, I'm on my way home. Fortunately, the prowler left by the time I got there, and 2 days later, the sheriff's department showed up. I talked to the sheriff and he wasn't concerned, so I ran for the office, knocked on 14,000 doors, was the first Republican elected in 20 years in that county, and fired the deputies myself. So I think that it's time we don't listen to those who say that we can't make a difference. I think it's time we look them in the eye and say, who says we can't? America knows things can be better. And the American people know that when Ronald Reagan's in the White House, things will be better. We're going to have a great Republican year. In Illinois, we're going to have a grand slam. We're going to win the presidency. We're going to win the Senate seat. We're going to win the state legislature. We're going to win it all. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be without hard work. But the Republicans are a team this year. And a very important part of that team is the man I'm about to introduce to you this evening. He's a man that...
Fellow delegates, my good friend Dave O'Neill, and my fellow Americans, may I first tell you what a great and rare privilege it is for me to occupy this platform, to share the same platform and follow a man whom I greatly admire and for whom I've had profound respect for so many years, the distinguished senator from Arizona and the former nominee of this party, Barry Goldwater. It's a great privilege, I assure you. What a magnificent crowd we have, gathered here from every part of America, representing every segment of American society. And what a magnificent week for the Republican Party. And what an appetizing prospect we have before us. Just let me now first, early in my remarks, hear the voice of every Republican in this hall, so that Americans all over this land will be able to hear you. How many in this hall would like to beat Jimmy Carter this fall? How long have we waited for this opportunity? How long have we savored the chance to bring new leadership to America? Too long. That's right. Too long. But not long ago, others of us thought we would be the ideal for the assignment of beating Jimmy Carter. We thought we had the calling. We thought we heard the trumpet sound summoning us to this great cause. Now, we are sure there is only one man for this challenge, only one man that can carry this banner, and that man is Ronald Reagan. I am convinced that Ronald Reagan will be the next president of the United States. I am convinced because he has touched the taproot of the American spirit. I am convinced because people are dedicated to him. People believe in him. People trust him to tell them the truth. And as we gather here tonight, all of us who challenged Governor Reagan for this nomination are united behind him. He is that kind of opponent. He is that kind of a leader. On the other hand, our opponents are anything but united. All they offer is the same confusion, the same dissension, and they've been giving Americans for the past long 4 years. You know, it may not be necessary for us to devise any special message to the voters this fall. Maybe all we have to do is rerun the comments of his fellow Democrats about the administration of Jimmy Carter. Listen to what they say. Listen to this, if you will. And I quote, "The Carter administration doesn't know the first thing about running the economy," unquote. Did Phil Crane say that? No. Did George Bush say that? No. No, they didn't say it. Who said it? A Democrat who knows this administration well, Senator Ted Kennedy, said that. And listen to this. Listen to this. Quote, "I am deeply concerned that our foreign policy is out of control," unquote. Did Howard Baker say that? Did Ben Fernandez say that? You know who said it. A Democrat who knows this administration well, Senator Ted Kennedy. And here's more. Quote, "People are wondering why we lurch from crisis to crisis," unquote. And this, "Carter's inflation policy is a calamity," unquote. Did Ronald Reagan or Bob Dole say those things about the Carter administration? No. You know who said it. A Democrat, Ted Kennedy. Say it again, Ted Kennedy. And one more, if you please, and it's a little bit longer, but it's very much to the point. Quote, "Before the last election, we were told that Americans were honest, loving, good, decent, and compassionate. Now the people are blamed for every national ill and scolded as greedy, wasteful, and mired in malaise." Did we change so much in these 3 years?
Or is it because our present leadership does not understand that we are anxious to be on the march again? Unquote. Did John Connally say that? Change the proud tradition of the grand old party, but we can also usher in a new era for the 80s when GOP stands for growth, opportunity, and progress. G for growth, O for opportunity, P for progress. GOP, growth, opportunity, progress. That is our challenge, that is our opportunity, and let me hear the voice of every Republican in this hall who wants to fulfill that destiny. Thank you very much.
As good as gold, to revive incentives in our economy. To restore the rewards once again for labor and capital, and to rebuild a national defense and foreign policy worthy of respect. This is the central purpose of a political party, to offer people superior ideas of government. Our party was founded on the irresistible idea that the Declaration of Independence applies to everyone. Mr. Lincoln inspired our party with the conviction that the ultimate source of progress and prosperity is the equal freedom of all Americans to fulfill their hopes and dreams for a better future. Austerity is not the answer. Austerity is the problem, and the American people are not the problem. The American people are the answer. Ladies and gentlemen, inflation is not the cure for inflation any more than inflation is the cure for employment. How many times must Carol Hallett and I say it? If you tax something, you get less of it. If you subsidize something, you get more of it. And in America today, we're taxing work and savings and investment and output, production and excellence, and subsidizing non-work, debt, consumption, leisure, idleness, and mediocrity. Is it any wonder we're getting less of the one and more of the latter?
Mr. Chairman, delegates, Mrs. Reagan, we are here to nominate the candidate of our party, the president of our nation, and the leader of free peoples everywhere. We are here to put an end to drift, confusion,
retreat and weakness in our foreign affairs. We are here to offer the American people a new policy of strength and principle, of security and peace, of progress and hope. And we are here to dedicate ourselves to the election of Ronald Reagan. Who will carry forward the vision of what America can be. Since the Second World War, three Republican presidents have given the free world creative and courageous leadership. In January 1977, that great and good man Gerald Ford. Bequeathed to the Carter administration an America that was building a sound defense, an America that had the confidence of its friends and the respect of its foes. Today, after nearly 4 years of confusion, we have become impotent bystanders. First, we must rebuild our military strength. No serious student of the subject disputes that there are significant gaps between Soviet capabilities and ours. We are falling behind in strategic power. We are far behind in conventional forces and slipping in naval forces to the point where we had to strip our Mediterranean and Pacific fleets to have a task force in the Indian Ocean. Sooner or later, our weakness will produce catastrophe. There is only one test for the adequacy of our national defense. Are these critical gaps being closed? Nothing less is adequate. Nothing short of it can be accepted.